This episode is brought to you by Danone North America, the world's largest B Corp, committed to doing all kinds of better for people and the planet. Learn more at DanoneAwayFromHome.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we're looking at things that have changed and things that are still in flux. From mothers balancing new lifestyles to the social stigma surrounding pumpkin spice.
You got rid of the star rating system and talked about, like, I'm not going to use the word ethnic when I talk about food.
They recognized that safety was our motivation, and they were very, you know, receptive to the changes, understanding what we were trying to accomplish.
A cupcake or a piece of bacon or a glass of rosé is not inherently gendered.
Tune in to Meet and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. This is the 272nd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a wonderful photographer who is the co-founder of Black Food Folks, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to persevere. Let's never give up on our dreams, our goals, and our desires. No matter what obstacles we face or challenges that come our way, let's keep moving forward and follow our instincts, ignoring any naysayers, and instead listening to our own hearts. It is never too late to do anything or be anything and achieve success. So let's go after what we want as perseverance prevails. That's my tip today. Now I'm excited to have my guest here with me. It is Clay Williams. He is a Brooklyn-based photographer specializing in food, drinks, and events. Clay has over a decade of experience documenting the ins and outs of our industry, shooting for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, James Beard Foundation, and more. Clay is the co-founder of Black Food Folks, a fellowship of Black food and drink professionals, a place to come together and share information. So hi, Clay. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Sherry. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So much to talk about. I love that I know you through the industry, through your work in photography, and having seen you at events. I do miss events.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally miss events.
Yeah, but let's start out with your background. How did you get into photography? What inspired you to start shooting and then dive into the food and beverage space?
I was first interested in photography way back in high school, and I studied black and white darkroom photography here at school here in Brooklyn when I was growing up. And it was a hobby, but it wasn't something I ever thought of as a career. It wasn't until I started my first career as a IT professional supporting creatives that I was looking for my own creative outlets. And through the work, I ended up playing a lot with digital cameras, and it became... It went from being something that I just was playing with to something that became something I sort of craved doing more and more. I wanted to tell more stories. I wanted I wanted to explore that outlet for myself. And so, you know, I started blogging and posting on various websites. And this was in the time when the big blogs started becoming a thing in the early to mid aughts, like 05, 06, 07. I was posting to sites like Flickr and Tumblr and whatever, and folks saw that I was going to these places. I was seeing the things that were happening and documenting them in, you know, I like to say Brooklyn as before it became the brand, or like as it was becoming a brand. You know, the whole animal butchering and the, you know, the homemade ingredients and doing the whole farm to table movement, like from the ground up. It just happened to be one of the things that I was documenting, and I was there when a lot of it sort of started taking off, and I just followed it from there.
So it was an interest in food or going to those type of events, and you just naturally were covering it, like that, how I naturally just like to go to restaurants.
Yeah, more or less, because, you know, I also naturally like to go to restaurants, and photography became the sort of part of all that. You know, this was when more places were doing open kitchens, and I like to cook myself, and so I always wanted to get a tip. I always wanted to learn something new or see how something was done. I don't have any sort of formal training, certainly, in the kitchen. And so, I always wanted a glimpse in, to see the action, to see the scene. And, as I was spending more time with photography, so it was basically a sort of natural extension of that, just, you know, documenting all that while I was doing it.
So did you have any mentors, or how did, are you just self-taught in photography?
I mean, I did study photography in school. I did take photo classes all through high school. I didn't study it in college. I wasn't in an MFA or journalism program or anything like that. But yeah, as far as like the more professional work, I did teach myself a lot, and in along the way, I did meet a number of people who helped me and who were there to mentor me. We were just talking about my other run-ins with HRN and Michael Harlan Turkel, who's also been a host on Heritage, was very had a huge impact on me. You know, when he was the photo editor for Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan, he would host gatherings with other photographers to show each other's work and to meet and to talk shop and that sort of thing. He's always been there to offer advice for me, and so early on, he gave me some of my first big opportunities, and really a lot of the advice that helped me move forward.
Ah, that's great. Show, The Food Scene. Yeah, he's taken a break from it, but right. He's definitely amazing photographer and a host from HRN that people can go back to the archives and listen to.
Right, exactly.
So, do you have any favorite assignments you've had over the years or events? I mean, I feel I saw you a lot at the James Beard House.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, this is interesting. It's Michael who connected me to the Beard Foundation, when I first started shooting for them in 2013, or so.
That's cool.
Yeah, he had, you know, he used to shoot as a volunteer for them. And when they were looking for more, and this was when I was just a year or two into being a photographer full time. It was an opportunity for me to connect with more chefs, more people in the industry, to have more sort of connections with the way things work, and to get to know people. To this day, the foundation is still one of the ways I know most of the people in my community, in my network. But as far as favorite assignments, I mean, that all changes through the years. I've worked with a lot of different organizations, and I do some different work. It's interesting. A lot of people say that photographers are either really good at events or really good at like sort of more fixed scene sort of things, and I've always been a little bit of an in between with that. I sort of enjoy both, and I feel like that work, each side impacts the other. I think of myself a bit as a documentary photographer, and so being able to catch moments at, say, a dinner party or at, like, you know, a big event, a gala or something like that, informs and impacts the way that I can catch action in the kitchen and really tell stories in a sort of different way. Sorry, that's a sort of long-winded version, yeah. Answer to the question, but yeah, if I had to pick one thing that certainly that I miss this year, it's the chef's boot camp that the Beard Foundation has been doing. I photographed all three of them last year in Georgia, Vermont, and upstate New York, and that was always, it was always a great experience, you know, getting away, getting sort of more direct interactions with chefs and people in the industry, and just generally having a really sort of good experience.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a wonderful assignment to have, and I hope it comes back in years to come. And your work is beautiful, from your portraits to your event coverage and up close pictures of food and drink. You are able to capture all that, which is, you know, I think why you've excelled in the food and industry space, food and beverage space. But you also did a book Queen's book, right? With Joe DiStefano?
Yeah. Joe and I put together Joe wrote and I photographed a book called 111 Places in Queens That You Must Not Miss, which is part of a bit larger global travel series of sort of books that are for locals as much as visitors. That was a lot of fun. Joe's wonderful, and he just knows the ins and outs of Queens so well that, I was born in Queens, but I've lived in Brooklyn for most of my life, every time I was going to go and shoot, it was a new adventure. It was a great experience. And then I went and I did another assignment for the same company the following year, where it was 111 Rooftops in New York That You Must Not Miss. That was also, you know, literally a new perspective on the city. Seeing New York from above is just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I had Joe on my show. Awesome. I looked it up back on episode 60 and he's so knowledgeable. And that must have been a fun to work with him on that covering.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So before we get to the next subject, let me mm-hmm. ask my question from my last guest. On episode 271, I had on Manit Chauhan. She mm-hmm. is the president and partner of Morph Hospitality Group, which includes Chauhan Ale and Masala House, Tan Soo, Chattable, and The Mockingbird, all in Nashville. She's a judge on Food Network's Chopped, and she's the author of a new book called Chat, Recipes from Kitchens and Markets and Railways of India. From the Kitchens, Markets, and Railways of India. There we go. So her question, how much does capturing the essence of food and showing it to the world show the soul of the person who's behind making it?
You know,
I thought it was deep.
Yeah. you know, it's interesting. I mean, it's one of those things I have a hard time with the title of food photographer because I feel like I photograph so much more than that. And I love taking photos of food, but I feel like the people are so much a part of all of that, that like, I don't know if I could just do food on its own without, you know, I want it in somebody's hands. I want someone touching it, someone enjoying it, someone plating it, right? I think that is a huge part of what imbues that, like, that sense of place and soul and personality to it. I think that the food itself can certainly be put together in a way that gives off a lot of those things, but I always like to include the person and the process a little bit in the work that I'm doing most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That makes sense. So, let's get into, Black Food Folks that you co-founded with Colleen Vincent, who is from the James Beard Foundation.
Yep.
So how did you guys meet and then come up with this collaboration? And I believe you started it in 2019.
Yeah, we're getting pretty close to our second anniversary. We're, I guess, about 2-3 months away from that. It's an interesting thing. The whole, you know, all of what we had in mind when we first started doing this has kind of been turned on its head, but at the same time, I think has given us just more opportunities to do the main idea behind it, which was connecting and supporting Black professionals in the industry. As to how it started, Colleen and I met through the years while I was volunteering and later working for the foundation. One of the things about the way the dinners work is that the photographer usually has a seat at the table, gets to eat the dinner as well, at the dinners at the Beard House. And so, for me, I always found it a little disruptive when I was at a big table with a bunch of folks, having to get up between every course to go back to the kitchen. So I always looked for either a solo table or to sit with whoever the host was, from the foundation. And Colleen and I would often be, Colleen and I, sitting together. And so we met and we talked and we'd have like these conversations about the state of the industry and where things are. And, And so we connected over that through the years. I think we officially were introduced by our mutual friend, Nicole Taylor, who is also a huge inspiration in how and why we launched Black Food Folks. But really the impetus came from conversations that both of us would have with other people around the industry about representation, not in the sense of, you know, not just in the sense of like, are there enough Black people in this room, but in the sense of if I would be talking to a food writer, they would be telling that, you know, we'd sit down and we'd have a drink and they would tell me about how, you know, there's this dish that I grew up with, or this type of food, or this something that I grew up with. And every time I try to pitch this to an editor, they either don't understand, or they want to pigeonhole it into soul food, or they say, oh, well, you know, we do the Black stuff in February, right? Yeah. You know, I would talk to chefs, and they would have similar stories where, you know, the media, the writers, or the, you know, funders or whoever the gatekeepers are, would not understand the concept that they're trying to put across. And it's all because, there's this myth, of the lack of representation of Black people in food. And, this idea that, oh, well, there just aren't that many Black folks in food. And that's not really true. There are plenty. But two, really the issue is with representation in the roles of decision makers and funders. Colleen says I always talk way too much about this part, but that's the long and the short of it, is that we decided that, you know, the thing to do, at the start, at the very least, was to just get folks in the room so that they could talk to each other, they could support each other. If a big publication wasn't going to run the story, then maybe we know someone with an indie publication or a smaller publication who might be interested in it. Or maybe, you know, this person who's run into that problem might have a better solution. We started that with this idea of, you know, I always say, you know, the idea was to get, you know, maybe 20, 30 people in the back room of a bar to have some drinks. And our first event, the middle of February, we in Flatbush, no less, we ended up getting over 100 people come through. And it was like a family reunion. Even when the people didn't necessarily know each other, so they knew somebody who knew somebody, and there was just this connection and this feeling that that's very different from, you know, and I've been in very many food events through the years, and I've never seen anything like that before. And I think that to me put the lie to the idea that there aren't many Black folks in food. We had folks come in from Connecticut, from New Jersey, from DC, from Detroit, just for this one gathering. And, you know, it was something that we put together in just a week or two. Every time from then on, every time I went to an event and, you know, someone would ask me, well, how come there aren't any Black chefs, or how come there aren't this many people in, you know, this many Black people in food or whatever, I then understood that the issue wasn't that we're not there, it's that we were being ignored. And so that led to our sort of second step, which was what Black food folks did up until, you know, up until the lockdown, which was largely spend time focusing on profiling the people and the work that Black folks are doing in the industry. I guess that's still what we do, but now we do it in a slightly different way. We're doing it with one-on-one conversations and sort of shows and talks, mostly on Instagram. But you know, that's where that all, that's how that all came together.
Yeah. I was going to ask how the pandemic, impacted the work you were doing and the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, as I've seen, I feel on Instagram, you guys are extremely active. I think whenever I'm on it, there's conversations, you know, which is right. Amazing that you're providing so much content and so many interviews and dialogues. I did some Instagram lives myself a couple of months ago, just because I felt it was this platform that everyone was home and people are on right. their phones and on it. And I felt it was a great way to reach people. So I think what you're doing is smart and makes sense.
Right. Yeah. We saw that people were doing these lives and doing these conversations, and at that time in particular, we knew a bunch of people who had been entirely thrown for a loop by the pandemic, by all the, you know, the whole situation. There were a number of chefs, Omar Tate, Aretta Itar from Gramercy, a sous chef at Gramercy Tavern, a bunch of other folks who suddenly had time on their hands. And we, you know, for me, I didn't want it to be the Clay and Colleen show. I wanted to have conversations that really reflected different perspectives of the community. And so, you know, our first talks, in a lot of cases, went to folks like them and said, you've got time. We have a network. You know, if you could talk to anybody in the industry, who would you talk to? And, you know, in a lot of cases, we were able to make those things happen. Omar talked to Dr. Lenny Sorensen, who was a farmer and academic in rural Virginia, whose work I wasn't familiar with, and he, you know, I mean, Omar is brilliant anyway, but like one of the things that always grabs me about like what he does is how much it's about him wanting to learn these things himself. And, you know, to be able to facilitate a conversation where, you know, that conversation went on for, I think, like 2 hours and change. And, you know, a lot of it was just oral history. And it was, it was fantastic. And so being able to do those things, we do still do usually at least one conversation a day, every weekday, and we have since the end of April. We're getting close to if we haven't already broken 200 talks that we've done. The internet has eaten a few of them through the months, but so I don't know the exact number, but it's been good. It's been great. It's a great way to build community, a great way to highlight the work that people are doing. We're going into the holidays when, you know, people are thinking about giving back. And so we can talk about that later. But so we're doing work to sort of encourage people to give and to support other businesses.
Yeah. Well, speaking of give back, mm-hmm. How did Black Food Folks Give Back grant program come about, which I think you announced very recently, a couple of days ago, last week.
Just a week or so ago.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. The way it came about, and it's a sort of long process the way some of these things go, but, you know, in the wake of the I don't really know what to call it, the events of June, following the murder of George Floyd and the sort of uprisings across the country, you know, a lot of businesses, a lot of folks put up black squares, which, I mean, but a lot of businesses took the opportunity to sort of put their money where their mouths are. And so Talenti, the gelato company, came to us and said that they want to support what we're doing, and they wanted us to be able to support the work of others in the community that we think could use it or deserved it or whatever. And so, you know, it's months later now, but just because of the way that these things go, and honestly, in part because, you know, Colleen and I have a lot of other things to do, but we finally were able to put this together, and you know, we selected 10 organizations, both for profit and nonprofit, that we think are worthy of support, that are actively fundraising right now, as a way to encourage our followers and everybody else to donate, to support, to build, help them build what they're working on. One of the, you know, biggest long-term issues in terms of inequality in business in this country, it has been the lack of investment funds. Black businesses are much less likely to get bank loans, to get bank loans with good terms, to get investors, all of those things. And so, you know, one of the priorities for us, I mean, we're an organization that's about supporting business and supporting people in this business. And one of the ways to do that is to, you know, is with actual physical money. You know, if it's one thing to, you know, to list people and all that, but, you know, but if they don't have the funds to actually do the work they need to do, then it doesn't actually amount to anything. And so we're giving each of those groups $5,000. They vary from media organizations like While Entertaining Magazine and Afros and Knives podcast, to farming groups like here in Brooklyn, it's Oko Farms, which is an aquaponics farm. Omar Tate's, I spoke to Omar this week, his honeysuckle project in Philadelphia. There's a group that's putting together something called the Maloma Heritage Center in South Carolina that just launched this year, just launched very recently, like a month or two ago. That seems to be amazing work, both connected to land ownership and to exploring the culinary heritage of the Black diaspora. Mm-hmm. It's exciting stuff, yeah. And so to be able to support that and to encourage other folks to support them is an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, it's terrific, and I was a fan of Talenti ice cream before gelato.
Totally.
delicious. So it's wonderful that they stepped up and reached out to you and that that's happening. So
yeah, I really appreciate it. It's fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a little break here and we'll come back and we'll play my speed round game. We'll talk industry news. We'll have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Every time your customers eat and drink, they vote for the world they want to live in. And as the world's largest B Corp, To Know North America helps people vote for a better world, with all kinds of better dairy, coffee, and plant-based products sourced and produced transparently. To Know North America has the brands people know and love, like International Delight, Oikos, Silk, So Delicious Dairy Free, Horizon Organic, and Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. But To Know North America represents more than just in-demand brands and better-for-your-business products. They bring their B Corp certification to life in ways that protect the environment and communities by utilizing 100% renewable electricity sources to produce their products at their manufacturing facilities, committing $6 million to programs that restore the soil's ability to capture and sequester carbon, helping to restore more than 7.8 billion gallons to freshwater ecosystems through their water partnerships over the past decade, and committing to 100% reusable, recyclable, and compostable packaging by 2025. Learn how you can choose better at DanoneAwayFromHome.com. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Clay Williams. He's a Brooklyn-based photographer who specializes in food, drinks, and events, and he's the co-founder of Black Food Folks, a fellowship of Black professionals in food and drink. So, Clay, it's time for my speed round game. What this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
These days it's all eat out, right? Whether it's outdoor dining or a takeaway, but yeah, eat out.
Eat out. Wine, beer, cocktail, non-alcoholic beverage, or champagne?
My wife just brought me a cocktail, which I'm very happy about. but typically I will go with, it's just pick one, right?
Yeah, just pick one.
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
I still like small plates. I know there's a little bit of backlash against that, but small plates are fun.
It's interesting. I think about doing the show with so many people. I think that one, it goes different ways.
Yeah.
Kind of almost 50-50.
Right.
Okay, I have a couple more. Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter, every time.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive, definitely.
Shooting portraits or events?
Portraits.
I wasn't sure where you're going to go with that one.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. Instagram Live or Zoom?
Instagram Live, absolutely.
Yeah, I figured that. Okay, last two are cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Awesome, that's the game.
Awesome. I actually don't remember the last time I was in Manhattan. It's been the interesting side effect of the quarantine and everything is... I can really spend more time appreciating my own neighborhood and the places closer to me.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Okay, so industry news. Yesterday, Esquire's Best New Restaurants in America list came out of 2020. And this is by Jeff Gordonnier. He's been on my show twice. He's one of the few people who's managed to be my guest more than once. And I love Jeff. And this list he put together with the help of his editor, Kevin Sintuamuang. I think that's how you say it. I was really happy that they didn't cancel their list this year, because a lot of publications have. And I think it's great to celebrate restaurants and chefs and successes in this time, especially that's so challenging. And somebody you've named twice now is on this list, Omar Tate.
I was actually with Jeff and Kevin when they ate at Honeysuckle almost a year ago. It was last December here in New York.
I'm jealous.
Yeah. Omar does amazing work.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because Jeff noted in something he wrote about his picks of how the chef of the year, which he gave to Omar, he doesn't have a restaurant. He also noted the drink of the year doesn't have alcohol in it. And they gave that to Gia.
Interesting.
And the pastry chef is someone who's in baking and activism,
Paola.
Very active.
She's also a host of Eric's from time to time, too.
Oh, sorry. Say that again.
Sorry. She's also a host on Black Food Folks from time to time,
too. Oh, cool.
Cool. She's
amazing. Yeah. I've seen her, I mean, through the I don't know, the past few months, all over social media and her work. And
her TikToks.
TikTok?
Yeah, she posts a lot of TikToks. She posts them on Instagram. I'm too old for TikTok, but she posts them in her reels on Instagram, and they're very silly. It's a lot of fun. Yeah,
I'll have to look for them. I was happy. I don't know, this list. You know, it's like I was familiar with many of the names or restaurants on it, and some I wasn't. But it was nice he gave. Ni Hao, which is in Baltimore, and it's a collaboration with Peter Chang and his family and P.J. Ong on the list. And there was some Kalaya in Philadelphia, which I'd been to. Actually, I was at the Philly Chef Conference same, and Jeff was there too. And I went that weekend, and it was excellent. And that was one of his favorites. So,
yeah, I went to Kalaya with Jamila Robinson and some folks the last time I was in Philly. It was a great experience.
Yeah. It's a wonderful restaurant. He's got some more casual places like Field Trip and Nami Nori, which are in New York. And I think it's nice to acknowledge and celebrate. And if anyone wants to check this list out, it's on Esquire's website. And I'm just happy for the people receiving some accolades.
Absolutely.
So that's that. And let me do my solo dining experience. So this week it's at Ollie's Pizza. So here's the rundown. The location: 4 Bruceville Road, High Falls, Hudson Valley, New York. The concept: it's an old school wood oven, Roman style pizza place with a full bar and outdoor seating. The owners are Anise Lawrence, Sophie Peltzer Rollo, and Ilan Bachrach. And on their website, it says they're lifelong friends. The pizza is by Frank Pinello, who's of Best Pizza in Brooklyn. So why did I go? Well, this is a couple of weeks ago. I was up in Hudson Valley. I wanted to check out the fall leaves turning and appreciate this beautiful time of year. And I'd heard of this place. Actually, Jeff Gordonnier is one of the people I'd heard it from. He was posting on Instagram. So it was on my radar. So my experience, it was a Friday night in October. I went on the early side. It was kind of an off hour because I heard it was popular, and I figured I'd better chance of getting a table. And there were people there at this early hour, but I was able to order right away and sit outside and I got a picnic table for myself, actually. And you ordered up front and then took a number, and they brought your order out to you. And I actually got two pizzas because, hey, when I'm upstate and trying a place out, why not? And they brought them out, and they came on this like cute little stand, one pizza above the other. So it was a nice presentation. And I also asked for a pizza box because I knew I wasn't going to finish everything. So what did I get? I got the margarita pizza and the white pizza. And I also got the house sparkling water. My take, both were delicious. They're kind of a cross between a single size pizza and a more shareable pie. The margarita had a really nice tasty sauce. It was a doughy pizza, but not too doughy. The crust had a nice bite, and the white pizza had sesames on the crust, which I haven't seen before. And so I thought that was a nice touch. They were both great. The ambiance. So Ollie's is in a building known as the Black Barn, and it has an outdoor area with socially distanced picnic tables. Very, very cozy, even though it's like right across from its parking lot, but it just had a cool ambiance. Perfect for casual bite with friends. Interesting tidbit. They also have Grandma Square Pizza, and I'd seen that posted by Jeff. And so next time, maybe I'll try that out. Personal fun fact, while I was up there, I did some nice outdoor exercise. I walked over the walkway over the Hudson, and I also climbed Mount Beacon, a little trail up there, and that was really cool. And the leaves were glorious. It was good timing. So the cost of this meal, it was $34. That's not including tax gratuity. And they also had a 3% COVID charge, which I haven't seen that much, even though I know it's people are allowed to do it, but they were implementing it. So that was good for them. Would I go back? Yes. Their website is ollies.pizza. That's www.ollies.pizza. There we go. Clay, you spend any time upstate a bit, or in the Hudson?
Not recently. I haven't been much of anywhere recently. I keep hearing about all the great options up there. Actually, I saw on the list, on Jeff's list, in Esquire, Dale Talde's place is listed there, and that sounds pretty exciting too.
Yeah. It that was on the list too, and Trout Beck, I think, was also on it, is another place upstate. So definitely I've been, in this time period, I, with my travel versus getting on a plane, I've just sort of taken some road trips.
Yeah. So. It's the time for that. I keep hearing. I'm not a driver. So I've been spending a lot more money on Lyft rides, but also that means I haven't really my only trip out of New York since I think February was going down to Philly to see some family about a month ago. So I'm definitely eager to be able to get on the road again.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to go back upstate myself. It's kind of a nice little getaway. So, and I'd like to get down to Philly too. Okay. So let's do the final question. My next guest is Ben Chekroon. He is the general manager at Blue Point Hospitality, and that's in Maryland. And Ben was formerly the longstanding maitre d' at Le Bernardin in New York City. And he made this move during a couple months ago at the beginning of the pandemic. Right. So, Clay, what would you like to ask Ben?
I have to wonder what it's like balancing. Well, I guess the question is, what's it like balancing, the hospitality experience for your guests with, with safety concerns, with the ideas of also taking care of your staff and everyone and keeping everybody safe. That's the big challenge these days. And I'm wondering you know, what are the concrete steps being done to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. And I'm sure there's so many different challenges now. So yeah. I will ask him. And yeah, he was with Limburg at End for so long. It's got to be, you know, that's also, it's going to be interesting to talk to him, see what it's like to be a new experience.
Right. Absolutely.
So, well, thank you so much. It was.
Thank you.
Wonderful to chat with you, and it's been wonderful to see everything you've been doing during this pandemic period and before. You know, as I said, I feel like so many times I would go to events and I would see you there, and it was always great, and I miss that. So I hope we can get back to that again at some point.
Yeah, I absolutely miss that. I miss running into you and everybody else at all the different food and tasting events and you know, being happy in a crowded room, right?
Well, congratulations on everything, and hope to see you soon. I'll certainly be looking for you online in the meantime.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Sherry. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. My guest today has been Clay Williams. He's a Brooklyn-based photographer specializing in food, drinks, and events, and he's the co-founder of Black Food Folks, a fellowship of Black professionals in food and drink. His website is claywilliamsphoto.com, and you can follow him at Ultra Clay and at Black Food Folks. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda Wang, and thanks again to Clay. I'm Sherry Bayer. We're off next week for Thanksgiving. So my next show will be on Wednesday, December 2nd with Ben. So I hope you'll tune in then. Until then, have a wonderful and delicious Thanksgiving. Stay safe and well, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.